Our first keynote speaker this morning is Alison Miller. And to introduce Alison, Alison is currently the Business Manager ePortfolios for the Australian Flexible Learning Framework. In that role, Alison manages the learner information business activity of the framework. Alison has worked as the South Australian eLearning Innovations Coordinator and as the project manager for the Inclusive eLearning Youth Project, both of which have been for the Australian Flexible Learning Framework. Alison has also worked as the eLearning Development Coordinator for TAFE South Australia and has over 7 years' experience as a lecturer facilitator in TAFE South Australia in areas such as business finance, administration and small business management. I'd like to introduce you to Alison Miller for this morning's keynote address.
So thank you, Jeff. I'm just going to play with the technology for a sec. And also thank you to Leo and Alex and Jeff for inviting me here today to talk to the group. And it's been an interesting journey for me because it's allowed me to take a closer look about what is point of view. But I think there's more experts in the room today who will show you what they're doing in terms of point of view. And so my focus won't necessarily be around point of view, but what will need to happen in order for something like spyglasses or point of view to happen within specifically the vocational education and training sector. What will need to happen for this to be embraced and for it to become more mainstream than it's currently, move it from an emerging technology to a more mainstream type technology. So I think what we need to think about is there needs to be a whole paradigm shift in the way that we teach at the moment. It's not necessarily going to be everybody needs to move in this direction, but we need to move from where we currently are. So we need to have change. And anybody that's worked in the vet sector know that change is more sort of constant than anything else. We're constantly changing. But we still try to teach for an industrial era. We still try to teach people in a way that I was taught and the way that my parents were taught for an area that was really for about manufacturing. So when I grew up, I lived in an area where Australia were big manufacturers. And then as I went through my schooling, we moved into what they call the information age, and it was all about data processing and using computers to create information. But we're now in what they call the knowledge era. And it's more important to know how to learn than it is to learn something specific. Because what you might learn today, within 12 months, will change. So if we think even about the economic environment. So this time last year when I was doing presentations, I was talking to people about skill shortage in a booming economy. And then I went away for a holiday during the December-January period and I came back and it was all doom and gloom. So things change really quickly and we need to be aware of that. And so the way that our knowledge needs to be able to change quickly as well. And how do we actually learn? And I love this photo, and I've looked at it a number of times. It's not nobody I know, but the scary thing is yes, it was in 1950, but you go to some classrooms now, even in the vet sector, and they're still set up. I went to one in institutes in, and the desks were actually bolted together in that position, so they were all. Not quite that way, but they were all in this way and they were all bolted together. So you were going to sit and listen to that person at the beginning of the room. The person at the start of that room has the power of the room. You know, they're the ones that we need to respect. They're the ones who hold the knowledge. And I think we need to move that. And if you read anything, so we need to move from education.au do a lot of research in this area. What education.au talking about, move from a transmission model where I'm standing up here and I'm transmitting out to a more of a participative model. So NAU have done a lot of work in what they're calling learning spaces. So if we've got a digital education revolution, don't just create banks of computers and call that the computer suite. We actually have to create spaces for learning and how learning happens. Learning doesn't happen in a sort of linear type environment. It's quite chaotic. And so we need to be able to support the learning in a different type of way than we currently are. I think people at this conference already know that, and that's why they're here. They're either here to find out a little bit more or they're already in this zone anyway. And also that what we're creating in an online environment, what some people call a walled garden, where it's actually quite closed and it's still controlled by the teacher. And that's why the teacher feels comfortable. We create learning management systems and the teacher feels comfortable because they're transmitting the information to people. But we know through technology, and this is a mock-up of Google Wave, the new sort of way we're supposed to be interacting by the end of the year. And you can see it's quite mocked up if you can read it. It's about pics of Sydney, and I've just been for a walk in Sydney. It's all very nicey-nicey. It's not natural. But what it's saying is we actually communicate in a range of different ways. We do communicate quite differently, and we've got the tools and the power to do that. So for something that's helped me in terms of moving to spaces like Point of View or the other sort of digital media spaces is what I had a realisation is my whole life, if I ever had to prove anything to anybody, 99% of the time I had to write it down. I have to present it in some sort of text space. Now, I'm not a natural writer. I know there's some people are. I would be interested in doing some statistics on how many people are natural writers and how many of the rest of us have to really work at how we write. And so how we assess needs to change. We currently get people to put it all into writing, but is that really the best way to capture the information about them? And that's why we're moving into a digital space. We've got all of these technologies. I mean, a lot of us have got the technology and the thing that we walk around in the mobile phone. You've got a video recorder, you've got an audio recorder, you've got a digital camera. So the ability to capture this is so much more available. And with the devices, like the Point of View devices, make it simpler and maybe less intrusive as well. I find the term Point of View not an easy one to work with. Spyglasses are nice, wearable technology, camera glasses, or the third eye was the one that I liked the best. So we use a lot of different terminologies around that, and so it's interesting how we use words, and so I thought what I'd do is actually try to describe the folksonomy that's going to be created around Point of View. So what sort of words are we going to use to describe the work that we do? And what I did is took my research notes for this presentation and put it in a thing called Wordle, and it highlights what we're going to actually do. We're going to be doing learning, we're going to be doing supporting, we're going to do streamlining. So they're the strong words that keep coming up from this particular area. And then when I talk to people about who are using Point of View, it's whose point of view is it? Whose point of view is it then when I'm thinking about assessing when I'm thinking about this? Robin wrote in a blog this week, you know, there's some real power in terms of capturing wearing a point of view glasses with something that's quite detailed and up close. Somebody else, Frank Guerin from South Australia, also talked about having international students and perhaps in cultural areas, having the glasses on is a lot less intrusive than somebody standing video. You become a lot more conscious, even when people are walking around with a camera. When that camera's there, you sort of start to feel that you have to look a little bit different or operate a little bit different. Whereas maybe if it's point of view, you don't really know it's there, and so therefore you're much more relaxed. And then somebody else said to me, actually what some of their assessors have started to do is actually just go back to the video camera because they're actually used to seeing it from their point of view. So when I assess you, I usually see it from here and not necessarily from your perspective. So maybe the assessors need to rethink the way that they assess people. I think we also need to learn a lot from what I call the YouTube generation. We are visual learners. We learn through observation. We're observing things a lot, all of the time, and we often do some learning there. People have also talked about this kind of capturing of evidence is actually more authentic than what you might get if you have what they call the tick and flick. So if you've got a workplace trainee that has to have their workplace assessor sign off that they can do these certain skills, often people talk about being a tick and flick, so the tick, tick, tick sign. And the assessor, the external assessor from the RTO, has to trust that the workplace assessor is telling them the right thing, that they're not just doing it to get this training or apprentice through quickly because they need them to do the work or they need the piece of paper. And so they're saying using something like the point of view is actually a lot more authentic piece of evidence than the tick and flick approach. We also need to be aware that and it's a saying that came out of our local Mobile Monday, where local industry are developing applications for mobile phones, and it came out from there, don't worry, be crappy. So don't wait till it's perfect. It doesn't have to be pure gorgeous. My son's got a $59 phone with a camera on it, and he and his friend take video of themselves, you know, jumping off the trampoline and doing alley-oops into the basketball, and they run around and show everybody on this tiny screen, and it's crappy. But it's not the quality that they're worried about. It's that they've done something they're really happy with and they want to demonstrate it to someone else. So don't look to have it perfect. You don't have to actually focus in on the tool. Focus in on what's happening there. So, yes, it might not always be gorgeous. It might not be well-produced. It's still look at what's in the actual video, not how the video is being produced. You're not assessing them as to whether or not they're going to be video producers or movie producers. It's what they can do within there. But what we need to realise is we actually also need to have people around them to support them. So, yes, there's an opportunity for people to take some more control, necessarily in their own way of capturing evidence. So we're asking them to go and do some of this maybe on their own or in a workplace environment, but they still need the support. They need the support of the educators. They'll need support of managers. And in our area where I work in ePortfolios, there's a whole range of people that they'll need support from. So as much as we need to move into a different way of learning and teaching, we will still be valued as educators. We just might need to do it in a different way. And what it does for me, what this all of this environment does for you, is highlight that there's this need for lifelong learning. We talk about it in Australia, we give it airplay, but we really don't quite get it at this stage. For us, in my head until a few weeks ago, it was about, doing some more training. That's what it was about. Lifelong learning was, go back to school and get some more education. But it's not. You're here today to learn. You socialised last night, networked each other. You were learning during that period. So lifelong learning happens all of the time. What we need to learn is how to facilitate that, to improve our society and improve our productivity. And anybody that knows me, this is where my passion is around the ePortfolio. So if we're going to have lifelong learning, and that's not just going to happen in formal spaces, how is this going to be managed? And so we've got a project that looks at ePortfolios, so an electronic space. So for a long time, people have created portfolio assessments, something educators are generally quite comfortable with. Now that we have all of this rich digital media that are coming through, we can actually capture evidence in a different way, and therefore we need to store and manage it in a different way. So for us, an ePortfolio is really about controlling or managing that information, hence we've got the control tower. So we've got the learning going on, we need people to support that learning and facilitate that learning, we're catching all the digital objects, and it's actually helping us then achieve a number of things. And what we've recognised in the project that I work for, it helps people transition, so actually get into VET quicker, perhaps through things like RPL, get into VET, transition through VET, so perhaps through fast tracking, and get out of VET either into higher ed or into further or into employment. So there's a lot of benefits around having the ePortfolio. Often people want to see, what is this ePortfolio? The ePortfolio can be a tool, so it can actually be a product. I know part of what Andrew's doing in terms of his work evolves around an ePortfolio, and it's about a tool, but it's also about a concept. It's also about how do we, if we're learning all the time, we're having to know how to learn, we have to know how to access that learning, how do we actually manage that process? How do we teach people how to learn? Learning how to learn is natural. Learning how to manage the learning is a lot harder. I think I've gone on about that. So there's all lots of really great stuff, that's all really good, but in reality when you sit and you talk to people or you watch people in this area who are sort of pushing the boundaries and are what you call the early adopters or the visionaries, there's a lot of barriers and there's a lot of issues that haven't yet been resolved. And anybody that works in a TAFE environment knows the policy and the paperwork one, that's one of them. And one that I always get, usually when I talk to people about innovation, the first question or the second one is, what will the auditor think? And, I feel I should really just go, hope there's no auditors in the room. I said that yesterday and somebody went, I'm an auditor. So what does the auditor think? Yeah, okay, so the auditors need to be educated. The Auditors want to see a piece of paper with a tick on it. You know, that one that, is that authentic or not? So we need to actually change some of the policies that we have, and we need to drive that. Don't think it's going to come from up here and come down and then go, oh, this digital stuff's great, okay? Yes, we accept it as evidence. It's not going to happen that way. And in fact, Melanie knows herself that she, you know, you have to go in and champion it. You know, create some waves around this area. Don't wait for it to happen for you. This one, the thing that most people don't want to talk about, and in fact, there's times where I don't want to talk about it because that's usually because there's no answer at this stage. Storage is an issue. Not if you talk to Andrew and Leo, all right? So I always go to them and get refreshed and go, okay, it's okay, I'll come back. But when I go out into schools or I talk to people in education, storage is an issue. And it's not just about storage of size, like where do we store all these big, large things? It's like I've lost it. It's around file management. So there's skills that we need to teach people as well. And then the connectivity. And I'm, again, not just talking about those gorgeous fibre optics. It's about access to this. So when I listened to a group of school teachers last week, enthusiastic. So I thought it was always the teachers that maybe weren't the ones driving this forward, all enthusiastic about adopting e-portfolios in their schools. But then they would come up and they go, look, we did this project, but our computer suites were down for 3 weeks. And then when we got them up, we're in there for 1 hour a week. And I'm thinking, you've got computers with children for 1 hour a week, and that's us teaching people about how to use technology. So our accessibility to technology is still not there. And we're in the digital education revolution. They want, in the school sector, they want 2-to-1. Think about your own learning organisation, those people that work in RTOs. What would be the number in your RTO of students to computers? So we need to make some changes in that. And our project's aiming to do some of this stuff, but it won't solve all of it. And some of it's not necessarily about not having the technology. So we've got the notebooks. You can buy notebooks for, you know, very little. You know, a couple of $100 you can buy a notebook for. But then the system doesn't support it. So if I thought my son's school would allow him to take his notebook in and use it and adapt it and embed it in what they did, I would buy him one and send him along with it. But they wouldn't. What would they make him do? Hand it in at the front office at the start of the day, like they do his mobile phone, and make him pick it up at the end. The other thing we need to realise is that there's a lot of skills that need to happen in this area. When we talk about digital, it is gorgeous and it is wonderful, but it's not easy. There's a lot of learning that needs to happen. And so that website there was developed out of a project from the framework last year, and you can just sort of see there's a URL. I've put it under where it says Power Up with Tools. Just under there, I've put the URL there. So Alicia Boyle ran a project last year in the Northern Territory. She recognised that, yes, there's a lot of learning needs to go on. So I just, you know, taking a photo or taking some footage is not the hard bit. It's getting it from that device to another device. And I tell you, for a long time, I didn't play in this zone because I couldn't do that. I couldn't work out easily how to plug it into my camera and then get it into this space. And then when I get it there, where did it go? Did I put it there or there? And then when I've got it there, it's often big. How many of you have put, you know, a photo in a forum and when you clicked submit it, it took up more than the screen? Or, you know, when you took the photo, the first time I had to get an avatar, you know, when you're doing working in an online space, you want a photo of something. And the person who took my photo cut the top of my head off. I'm like, you know, do you not see this? So there's a lot of skills that need to be developed in this area. And look, don't reinvent the wheel. Have a look what Alicia's done. And if you've got other resources in that area, share them, because this is where a lot of the learning's going to have to happen as well. And I don't know how much time I've got. I forgot to ask Alex. 10 minutes. Oh, gosh. Might have to do a song and dance. I might. And then it's the future, looking into the future. And I'm not comfortable yet working in the video space, and so I didn't do the video. I didn't think I'd have time, but now I realise I could have probably played it. But somebody mentioned last night MIT in America, how I think they have a media lab, or they have a research and development lab. And it's, you know, where are we moving in this space? If we're sort of walking around with cameras sort of in the middle of our head, where might we go? And one of the students in this research lab has developed a thing they call the sixth sense, where he's got the camera hung around his neck and then he's controlling the camera through his fingers there. And what they realise, actually, I think it's part of the mobile phone too, that we've got these devices and we don't use them to their full potential. And so he's then projecting. So he's actually then got a message by the looks of it there, call this number. He can project his technology onto a space and then integrate with it. So this is in the future. He's then projecting something up onto a screen. In fact, on Monday night at our Mobile Monday, the guy had a mobile phone that for 2 hours can project onto a wall from the mobile phone. And I just thought, you're probably going to have to carry a bigger tripod to put the mobile phone, because who would want to stand for 2 hours with a mobile phone? But if you wanted to do a demonstration with somebody, shoop, up on the wall. So that's not too far away anyway. And this is the guy taking a photo, so he's out and about, and he takes his photo, and this is what they're imagining it is. Or this one, where the camera is actually capturing the friend, the student, and it's doing sort of some sort of digital, who is this one? And then a cloud, tag cloud starts coming up about who the individual is, that the images aren't coming very well. So this is where we're going into the future. And I thought this was quite an interesting quote, and again, I borrowed it out of one of the education.au's in there. Look, reading and literacy is important. We still need to be able to read and write, but the most important thing is that we need to be able to learn, and I love that one, unlearn and relearn. And a classic example is that on my notebook I have Open Office. So when I use my Microsoft Office suite, when I go to use my Open Office, which is very similar to Microsoft Office, but not exactly the same, I have to unlearn what I learnt in the Microsoft Office suite to find where these new bits are. So we're doing it on a regular basis. We just probably need to facilitate it in a different way. So thank you very much for allowing me to present today. I think there's going to be some really interesting areas presented at the conference. Take it away, play with it, experiment with it, but then share it back with others. This is a new area. There's not a lot of information out about it. There's not a lot of resources out about it. So the information needs to be shared within this particular community. So good luck. Have a lovely day. Thank you. I was not holding you short, though, were I?
No, that's fine. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, I'd like to once again thank Alison for that wonderful presentation. One thing Alex has asked me to do is just, do that one-line reflection in between each of our presenters from my point of view. The interesting thing I tried to reflect on in listening to Alison's speech is how much was there in 25 minutes. It just once again fascinates me of the field that we're working into, of its breadth and its depth. But in everything that Alison was talking about that was fascinating me, two messages came out for me, and one was change consistently, repeatedly, and the impact of that change. But the other one was actually the second sentence that Alison said, and the whole thing loops back to the start. And what Alison said in thanking the organisers of today's conference for inviting her, she said what it stimulated her to do was to think about POV, because she hasn't done much of that. And I think that if anything sets the scene, I hope, for today's conference, it's that. In all of that change, in all of that work that Alison's been doing in e-portfolios, but also in thinking about the tools that we're using, the technological changes, the changes to learning, the changes to our organisations, the changes to our students, POV is another, yet another change. And it's a very exciting, stimulating area to not only unpack what this technology is, but ask yourself the question, where does it fit in with all of that? And what is the impact? What can be the impact on educators, on industry, on educational organisations, on learners, and on the systems that we work on? And so I would thank Alison for those insights this morning, and hopefully it does give us a context.